thanks for being here today. Steve Gear is out today due to a death of a close friend of his, so give him some thoughts. But he would be here if he could, but is traveling today. So with that, I will going to turn it over to Jason to get us kickstarted again, and we'll move on. So
I'll turn it back very, very shortly.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. Good to be back. Thanks so much for having us back. Before I go too far, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Andy Baker, here. You haven't seen him before, but he is onto our team now. We have an expanded team, some of whom you'll see here, some of whom will be familiar to you. Mr. Gordon, Melanie Hobart, who you've seen before. Andy Baker will be a new face for you. But we'll talk a little bit more about phase two and the reason that we needed some more people on our team when we get to that. The agenda is here. It should be the same as what you have in front of you on the paper. The introductory remarks will be given by you, right, Mayor?
Yes.
You're going to do the introductory remarks, and then we'll come back and we'll hit the rest of the agenda, which is up here and on the screen right now. But first, I'm going to turn it back to you, Mayor.
All right.
You can.
Thank you, Jason.
You can click this forward.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Again, thanks everyone for being here today. I'm Bob Andewick, Mayor of Urbandale. I think I know everybody here, but appreciate the involvement of everybody on the phase one of this. I think we've made a lot of progress over the last months with the help of everyone in the room, also with the help of Jason to facilitate this. So we've gotten to a point of at least having a draft of a memorandum of understanding to work on and to go through that. So the phase one is really the summary of where we've been. We came together, we've discussed some various options, and at least indicated initially that we would prefer to explore an asset transfer to create a regional water utility. So we are at the point of now phase two. And I think really where we are right now is we need to get to a point where, and I think the group is, there's some consensus that we need to get to a point where we do some hard financial analysis as far as the pros and cons of a regional water utilities. I think we need to get the buy-in of all of our communities, that this is in the best interest of all of our communities, both those both ones with assets and one without, that we are working on a regional utility that's best for everybody, and we need to demonstrate that to our constituents and to our ratepayers. So to best establish that, there's been some discussion as far as how we get there, and I think again, well, why don't we summarize it then where we're headed as far as phase three. Assuming we get through phase two like we would hope, then we would move on to phase three and get to the decisions on each community as far as working on the asset transfer model and then also working on other options that we might come up with as far as the goal of regionalization. So again, we're at the point of phase two, and with that, as far as the detail, we are, again, the goal is to provide for an asset transfer as our option for a regional water utility. And I think the way we would best get there is to actually try to divide and conquer a lot of the issues that we have before us. So the proposal is that we would kind of bifurcate, but work together, but still bifurcate some of the work as far as between a steering committee and a technical and finance committee. The steering committee would be comprised of the water boards of West Des Moines, Urbandale, and Des Moines, which were the original ones that actually were looking at this, and the genesis of our really our discussion based on what happened with the legislature. And also outside of that, three of the largest water users and without water utilities, Johnston, Ankeny, and Waukee. That side would work on again the more overarching issues as far as asset transfer, but then separately we'd have a technical and finance committee that'd be comprised of utility staff and experts in the water area from each of the cities that have interest on this to move that forward and keep those discussions going as well. I'm sure if there was another. So really to formalize that, we were going to have a selection of a chair for the steering committee. I think Mayor Gear had expressed interest. He was essentially our chair for the first phase of this and expressed desire to do that. But we probably should formalize that at this point. So with that, is there any nomination for that?
I would move to nominate Steve Gear.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Same sign? Okay, that carries. And then also selection of co-chairs for the technical and finance committee. And Sue, I guess I'll turn to you, but do we have any thoughts on that at this point?
We don't. What we wanted to do is not put too much on one individual, is kind of what I think some of the folks have meant to outline this. We might want someone definitely from a couple of our communities or cities serving in this to pull together that expertise that we would need. Vern, I'll look to you because we thought you would be best served for the kinds of things we're talking about. I'll use you as an example on the technical committee and some of the other communities such as Clive. I think we would love to have more input on the technical side. Windsor Heights. So, you know, to really dig into some of those issues so that we're not, you know, getting into the weeds here in the meeting with some of the larger ones, but addressing both. And really, I heard the term running in parallel. Mayor Lorenz, do you want to add anything else to your thoughts on this process?
Other than we talked last Friday and thought that it would be a good idea, like Sue just said, to have these two committees kind of run in parallel, to where the steering committee is working more along the governance line and the technical financial committee is working on the technical side and working with Jason and his staff on the financing of the transfer of the excess capacities and that type of stuff. But then we need to have a way to have those two groups communicate back and forth, so as something comes through the technical committee, that the steering committee is well aware of it, and we can keep things moving together in the same direction.
I will say there was another thought that came about when we had the executive steering committee, and that is for the amount of time that we have committed with Jason. It's simply not enough to get into the weeds, if you will, on the technical side. And so I believe the mayors came forward with an idea that they wanted to propose to this group as a whole.
Propose?
All right. Gary, go ahead.
A few of us got together Friday to kind of talk about this a little more. You know, we felt that it wasn't stopped, but it took us, you know, slowdown on from where we had been. And we had a group of eight get together, and we determined that the best approach would probably be, like we just said, to split this in two and have a steering committee comprised of Des Moines Waterworks, West Des Moines, West Des Moines Waterworks, Urbandale Waterworks, and Ankeny, Waukegan, and Johnston. And then that would be the group that is represented here today at this table, and then have the mayors appoint someone appropriate from their community to the technical finance committee to keep that moving forward. And then we also discussed location, and nothing against having it here at Des Moines Waterworks, but this room is really not that conducive to this type of meeting. So Sue reached out to Greater Des Moines Partnership, and they've offered to let us use their main floor conference room as a partnership. So there'll be plenty of room to have the proper size table set up the way we need it, and then much more seating than we have here. And I think they've got all the electronics there, so it should be a lot more conducive to keeping these discussions going.
And just to be clear, that would be for the steering committee meetings alone. The technical committee could meet, make a meeting far more frequently.
Parking's cheaper here.
Yeah. Wherever you like.
Yeah, the technical committee, once they convene, they would elect their own chair of that group and determine frequency of meetings, where they're going to meet, how they're going to structure themselves, and
It does. I have a question where that leaves me set. I mean, besides technical committee, just this steering committees would be open, I would assume.
Yeah.
So I could still have my nose in there if I wanted to see.
Right, and that's why I said this, as you can see right now, it looks like one open seat that is kind of crowded.
I agree with you.
So by moving it down to the partnership office, there'd be plenty of room for anybody else that wants to come. But to get, to be productive, we felt that we needed to kind of shrink the size of the seat.
Oh, I agree with you.
And it wasn't, one of the things we noticed, that it wasn't always consistent as to who was here and who wasn't.
Yeah, so we're, again, we're not trying to.
We're not trying to leave anybody out. We just want to make it of a size that's nimble and we can move.
You need somebody that's going to be involved.
Right. At the end of the day, I think our goal, again, is to have a true regional utility that would hopefully include all of the users in the region. So that's our ultimate goal. We're not trying to create an exclusive group at this point, but I think what we're trying to do is create a workable group that can slot through the major points and try to get to a workable model that we can then bring out to hopefully to get this to a point where this is going to work for the entire region. And look at the various aspects as far as, you know, every city is unique as far as their approach to regional water. There are some that have assets, some that don't have assets, some that are various states of users, some that have purchase capacity, some that don't. So we have a lot of varying issues that we need to look at. I think that what we're trying to do through the steering committee is at least have that representation of the various communities on that steering committee and try to work through all those issues that hopefully would be best that can best represent the region that we can then bring out to try to come up with an approach that would work for everybody in the region.
So all of the public outreach, if you want to call it that, that we're doing currently would stay in force and keep that up to date. And then the six communities that I mentioned there are all going to participate financially in the cost of Jason's extra time.
And the idea would be, I think we expressed this early on, is that the cost of this, including Jason's time, would ultimately be treated as a startup cost of the regional utility, assuming we get to that point. But the three original communities, West Des Moines, Urbandale, and Des Moines, our water utilities have put in significant funds to date, have committed to additional significant funds as well. But then we expect also then Johnston, Ankeny, Waukee would step up with some funds to pay for those startup costs, then we would figure out, we'd have to come up with a mechanism as far as how that's all treated fairly for all the communities, assuming we get to a point of a regional water utility.
Mayor County, you had a point.
Well, I'd like to make a quick comment. I apologize, and I'll make this statement right up front. I hope that we can schedule these meetings at times when we don't have a city council meeting.
Yeah.
And so we've got a council meeting starting at 3:30, so I need to leave. But in summary for me, I really appreciate everybody's interest in thinking about the future of water and how we all work together. I remember a number of years ago, Urbandale and Des Moines set about having some early discussions around these issues, and it sort of evolved into we ought to all be talking about it because we're all concerned about the future of water, the quality, the quantity, and the price. And a lot of people, and I remember years ago, Scott and I had a number of discussions about this. How do we all participate? How do we price this? You know, we're not exactly at the table. How do we work that? And so that was a huge issue, and actually it seemed like one of the early drivers of fairness and how do we think about this. And how does everybody get a seat at the table, which is part of the discussion that I think we've had with Jason, and he's helped us work through a number of issues with his experience, and I think it's been very, very helpful. And I think the question that, you know, we're all thinking is, at the end of the day, who's in and how do you get in? And, you know, are there assets? And the asset transfer model is one of the things we've talked about, and what does that mean? And, you know, what's everybody's cost? If there's assets being put in by some, do others have cost, and what does that look like? What does it look like moving forward? And I think hopefully that'll happen. And it's not only today for me. I'm thinking about, you know, as we think 40, 50, 100 years out, there's going to probably need to be expansion. And then how do we work through those issues? How do we work through the cost of expansion, and does everybody pay in, or the assets are already in, do they represent part of that cost? I mean, I don't know. I think those are all issues that have to be worked through, and knowing that any policy that we put together, you know, probably has both fiscal and physical, literally, where's it going to be, discussions about assets, and we're going to depend on our technical committee to kind of begin to get us to understand that, not only what it is that we have today, but where we're moving forward and how we get there. So I it's really exciting to see everybody here in the room, and I will turn all my whatever little authority I have in this table over to Jonathan Gano, who is going to our public works director, kind of represent at least me, and take some of the notes while I run down and try to run a city council meeting. So thank you all, and I apologize. I gotta go.
We thought it would be appropriate to have our three water utilities individuals most involved with the technical side, Ted, Diana, and Dale, convene the first meeting of the technical committee, if you would. And then from there, that committee can elect their own chair, co-chairs, however you choose to run it. That's fine. Is that what we like? If that would be acceptable to the three of you? I think a lot of people in this room would be very interested in when those meetings are held. And as far as the partnership office, we just need to find out if those communities engaged and get those dates to Jane to reserve the conference room. Any questions from everyone? We know there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we thought this would be a great way that we could have more work going on, but providing that technical and financial side to support of Jason as well.
I guess I would suggest, if there's no other further questions or discussion, that we probably need to make a motion and vote to form both the steering committee and the technical finance committee.
So moved.
Okay. There's a motion and a second.
Any second.
Further discussion?
Further, you want to say aye?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. All right. Thank you.
I guess the question is going to come up is on the financial end of it. What vehicles are going to be put in place, and how? What's the cost going to be to move that forward? Do we know that yet?
That's one of the things that I'm hoping that the technical finance committee would be working on.
But Dave, I think you're asking from the Johnston standpoint.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I think we're still trying to finalize that number yet. I don't know if we have a final number yet.
Do.
The FCS.
We do have.
Yeah.
We do have a final number.
It's a not to exceed number.
Yeah.
But as far as what Johnston's share of that would be, okay.
It's $10,000 for each community.
That's the number you're looking at right now?
Yes.
Will the group be coming to each city with a letter request or something that we can take to our councils and get them taken care of?
Well, and just to be clear, on the steering committee, we would be talking about the six largest communities doing that by.
So if you're on the technical finance committee, you're not.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry.
So the steering committee.
You want to
donate. Yeah. Well, we'll give you a letter, yeah.
I'm going to ask you to donate.
Like how Johnson's a little bigger than you.
Yeah.
So, Bill, would you mind talking about how we've handled the previous FCS contract and how the three entities paid into that, just so they know how that's been handled?
Happy to do that, Sue. There's actually been two contracts for phase one and for phase two, and Des Moines received the invoices
paid the entire amount and then turned around and invoiced either Urbandale Waterworks or West Des Moines Waterworks. And that's what we contemplated for phase two, the second contract also. But there is language, as you know, that says that it, as Mayor Anderwig talked about, is a startup cost. And I assume that that's the way you want us to handle the $10,000 contribution from the other three communities here also. It is a contribution, but it may not be their ultimate contribution in the event this goes forward and there's right. reapportionment of costs.
Right.
But happy to handle that. Mayor, if I may, we had some feedback along the lines of Mayor County also that the Monday meetings can create a concern for the steering committee. I know that the Mayor County had mentioned to me that the Monday, June 25th, is also a conflict with the Des Moines City Council meeting. Polk City had told us today also that Monday evening meetings are very difficult for them to finish here and then get to their city council meeting. So there's some scheduling issues that I think you want to look at.
Yep.
Whether they can all be resolved is a different issue.
I think Ankeny has, you know, your meeting on Monday.
In fact, we're going to have to leave about 4:15 all by tonight.
Yeah. So
we're going to have to get schedules coordinated with Jason and the other mayors.
Jason will have to get up a little earlier in the morning.
One last thing I forgot to mention was with the formation of the steering committee, we also talked about an executive committee from that steering committee, and that is suggested to be made up of Frank, Steve, Bob, myself, Sue, Jody, and John. It's just something to be a little more nimble on in between these steering committees. Anybody have any discussion on that?
You being my rep?
Sure.
I think that's fine.
Can you run who that's going to be again?
Pardon?
Can you run the names again?
Yeah. Frank County, Steve Gehr, Bob Anderwig, myself, Sue Hubbard, Jody Smith, and John McHugh.
And just to be clear, that was the group that met last week on Thursday when we
came
together with this format and then reached out
to Jason. Seems
like a reasonable
approach.
Yeah. Okay.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Thank you.
I think that's all we have.
Good.
I believe so. I think so now we...
Turn it over to Jason.
Start getting into the meat of getting this done. So
let's do that. Thank you for that discussion. We're going to roll right into this. One of the things that I wanted to do before we... Well, tonight's presentation and discussion is really about where have we been, what is it we're heading out to do right now, and what's that going to look like, and what are the things that we need to collect from you in order to answer these questions. But before we got into what we're going to do next, I felt it was important to congratulate everybody on what you've done so far. It really is quite remarkable. I have been able to follow the news media okay. This quote was pulled from watching a fairly long video that had been done with many of you in this room in the Des Moines Register. And this particular quote, which happened to be from Mayor Gehr, I thought really encapsulated what we were able to accomplish and what I'm going to lovingly refer to for now and forever after as phase one of our work, which was everything that we did last year before we flipped the calendar over. But when you looked at where we started from back in basically August, September timeframe last year, we had so many communities who had a great interest in what was going to happen with regionalization here in the Des Moines area, but a lot of people with a lot of different views on how that would take form and take place. And over the course of a few months and a lot of workshops and a lot of hours in this room spent together, I think you've coalesced on some really important themes. If we haven't reached complete agreement on every single thing, which I think would be a kind of Herculean task, we definitely have reached some kind of consensus on an overall approach that seems to be acceptable. That journey started way back in September and October of last year, and we had the guiding principles that helped us get out the door and try to figure out, you know, what are we looking at? What's the landscape look like today? From those principles and from a whole lot of interviews that I was able to do in the first couple of weeks, came up with a list of topics, 15 of them, that we prioritized and organized into several workshops. The first three of those were spent kind of getting organized and then getting off on those very first high priority topics. Then moved on into November, and after we had looked through some of those first three workshop topics, we had already kind of come to a place where many people were wondering if including all of the assets into this new proposed regional authority might not be the best idea to achieve what many wanted to achieve from regionalization. And so we started to look at it. It wasn't in the guiding principles. In fact, it was specifically not in the guiding principles that we do that. But the group decided at that point to just put that on the table for the time being and let's explore it. So we did that. And as we moved through from November and into December, as we looked more and more at this, we started to refine it. We started to snap the other pieces of that regional model together. And early in January, we were able to circulate a draft memorandum of understanding, which was meant to try to put down in writing in a much more formal way what we thought we had decided on during this little road trip that we'd been on the previous few months. It was also an opportunity to give people beyond this room an opportunity to see what we had kind of decided together and what was on our minds so that they could react to it and start providing some feedback more formally into that process. And I think we got that started, and we did get a great number of comments back on that draft MOU. I think we're still working through some of those comments as we sit here today. We're kind of addressed half of the MOU. I was out here in February, or was it January? I can't remember which now. And we addressed about half of them, and there's more work to be done on the MOU. Those 15 topics that we had were not little. Every single one of them was sort of a big, beefy endeavor into things that were you know, kind of difficult to get our arms around. Really excellent work that I think we all accomplished in this room was about 8 of those things. We either reached a unanimous agreement or very, very big consensus, 90% plus when we did some of our polling on this. And I thought that was pretty remarkable by itself. Over half of those issues we really tackled extremely well. 3 of those things we had to leave in progress. I would say that they're just unsettled. So it's not that we didn't address them. We did. I don't think we had the kind of consensus on them that made everyone feel like we could really move on. They're in the MOU. There are a lot of comments on those particular topics in the MOU, and those are some of the things that we still have left in front of us. And this steering committee and this technical committee, those things are sitting right there to be handled right out of the gate. We did have 4 things that we ended up tabling, really things that we are now going to be looking at in phase 2. And, you know, we initially put them on the slate of 15 because we had hoped that we would be able to get to them. To be honest, when we got to the point where we started talking about asset transfer, that kind of gave us a little curveball in our slate of agenda there. But it's okay, I think, because I don't think we could have gotten to these four things, and I'll talk about them here in a minute about what they are, without knowing that asset transfer was something that this group really wanted to see. In other words, had you decided a different approach, those 4 questions would have come out, and we would have come out a totally different way on them than we are likely to come out with them now in phase 2. The one issue that was identified and addressed after we started, of course, was the asset transfer issue, which became a pretty important concept overall. Here's what they looked like. In the far left column here is the 8 that we ended up reaching some pretty wide agreement on. If not unanimous, it was pretty wide. And these are big, big issues. That obligation to serve, if you remember, we talked about that, how important that was, that the regional authority had this obligation to provide for these water production needs in the region, really, you know, barring kind of force majeure and kind of strange circumstances, really without fail. So taking on a very big responsibility and the right to serve being that it would be the sole provider to the members so that there's not a competitive environment that would ruin our economies of scale, would ruin what happens to be a natural monopoly formation that we're making here. And so those were big right out of the gate. The capitalization is how we would finance the regional authority, and the accounting framework kind of went hand in hand with that. It was through those discussions that we started to see that without some of the assets attached to the organization, that it was going to be really difficult to create the governance that everyone wanted. It was going to be really difficult to create the level of independence that it seemed everyone wanted. If I could kind of pull one word out of all of those discussions, I feel like this idea of an independent regional authority, or just independence as the one word, was the thing that seemed to keep coming up more and more frequently as we kept talking about this. And those two topics right there, I felt were very formative in getting to that idea of what an independent authority needed to look like. We walked through and looked at what the operational and planning authority needed to look like at that point. And once we had determined that the asset transfer was going to be a thing, some of these others just really started falling into place for us and became easier for us to really comprehend and talk about. The work in progress, the things that we were wrapping up the year on was the authority of the board and the structure. And we were working quite a bit on that. And I would say that we've got a pretty good construct put in place for it. If you remember, it resembles the DART structure that had been proposed. And we talked about it a number of times. It's a fairly large board that's been proposed, one that would include multiple members from the region. In fact, maybe more than one member, more than one representative from certain communities, depending on whether those communities had both a city structure in place and a water board. That was one of our sort of last discussions that we had on the structure of the board. And the asset inclusion. We know that asset inclusion is something that everybody wants, but what we've still work in progress is exactly how that would take form and what those mechanics would look like. Tabled for phase two, some of the things that we had on our list that we have had to lay off until this second phase is, what is that rate setting framework going to look like for this regional entity? That's a critical question. That's going to define what the wholesale rate is for all of the members. But it's not a question that we could have answered intelligently without knowing that we're indeed going to have assets transferred in. And how that would take place. To be contributed means something. To be purchased means something. To be contributed and purchased means something else. We've talked about all of those things in different ways, shapes, and forms. Proof of cost efficiency, this goes to the notion of whether forming the regional entity is going to be something that comes at a real cost savings for everybody who's a member. That's what we're going to talk about a lot when I get into the phase two discussion tonight, so hold on that. And then better cost control goes hand in glove with the proof of cost efficiency we have there. I figured I would draw a easy schematic, something that gives us a visual to hang on to as to what exactly does this regional authority model really look like. And certainly you could probably add a lot more facets to this and complicate this quite a bit more. The regional authority certainly is going to be a complex organization, but if we boil it down to its essence, what the regional authority is going to be, at least the way that it has been proposed right now, is a collection of existing and purchased capacity and proposed new assets, which would be investments in the future for new water production capacity in the region. All of that would be the regional authority, and the organization that went around managing and operating that would become the regional authority's responsibility. The authority itself owns and operates via operating agreements with the producers, the water production assets, and then sells the water wholesale to members. It's governed, the authority is, by a new board overseeing all the regional water production matters. And that board is like I said, a fairly large one. It's definitely of regional content and regional representation. the members purchase water only from the regional authority, and they own and operate all the distribution facilities. They govern all local matters, including local rates and charges. So the regional authority's authority, if you will, stops at the community boundary, and communities maintain governance and local control over what's going on inside of their own distribution systems. And then, of course, there's the individual customers. Everything about the regional authority and the regional model should be shown and proven to be a benefit to those final customers. And the individual customers in all of this really continue to purchase water from the members that serve them already. So the relationship that they end up having in all of this should appear to be seamless and transparent. The regional authority is one step removed from the individual customers. But what we would hope to see, and what we hope to prove in phase two, is that all of the produced water in the region can be produced at a cheaper cost if we do it at the authority than if we all go about it as the status quo, or we all go about it in our own way, shape, or form. Any thoughts on this? Did I capture this okay for everybody's summarized view of where we're at? I didn't want to miss anything important. If that didn't capture it, maybe this will. What that regional authority really is, some key attributes of it: a separate board with regional representation, the sole provider of water production for the members. They're required to provide service for the members. The regional authority has separate accounting, financing, and rate-setting authority and capability. It owns and operates water production for the region, and it plans and constructs any new water production in the region. Those are big, big, big responsibilities for the regional authority to take on. And if we boiled it down into three big key words, this is me trying to paraphrase this, is that it's an independent, responsible, and regional authority. It's going to have all that it needs in order to fulfill that very big mission that has been envisioned by the members, at least in this room. And that really is where I think we are today. Yeah.
Second to last goal, operate water production for region. I know we talked about that, and I think the discussion in the past has been the contract for operation of the existing facilities.
Yeah. Let's try not to be confused. So they're responsible for the operation, okay? But they will have operating contracts with the existing producers.
I understand. It just doesn't say that. I want to make sure that I haven't missed something.
Nope. I don't think so. Okay. So if that's where we're at on phase one, we can all kind of congratulate ourselves on where we're at, you know, from phase one, because I think it's an incredible task. That sets us up to answer some incredibly important questions that still remain for us. And I didn't know that was an animated build, but I'll just bring them all in. If you were to come into a regionalization question like we may have been last summer, and you were wondering, what are the things that I need to know in order to decide whether or not regionalization makes any sense? We would probably break that down into three big categories of concerns. One, in no particular order, certainly would be governance. So how will all the parties participate, and what kinds of things will govern behaviors between the parties, with the organizations involved, with the operations, with the planning? You can kind of look at governance from so many different facets. I think it's fair to say we spent a good amount of time in phase one talking about how that would take shape and what kind of governance structure really works best for this region. We talked some about the category in the middle, service level. We didn't need to talk about it a lot, because I think that it has been assumed that all of the services can be provided with the assets that we have at the same quality. I think the thing that we ended up talking about more with respect to service level is on the idea of asset inclusion and how assets from other producers, I'll say other than Des Moines Water Works producers, would also be included in the assets that become part of the authority. So that really fell under a kind of service level type discussion. And then there's the question of economics. What are the costs and benefits of doing this? And is it going to be a benefit or a win-win situation for everybody involved? And that's one of the questions that we haven't talked a whole lot about that we've really kind of reserved for phase two. Comes down to a couple of sort of big questions inside of that economics box is, can the regionalization save money for everyone? And this is something that Mayor Gear in particular has mentioned probably at every workshop. I think I've got it in my notes for every workshop, is this is definitely what his expectation would be, is that we should be able to see that we can produce at a lower cost if we regionalize than if not. And I think he verbalized it really quite well. That would be similar to the way I would say it as well, is that kind of constitutes that win-win scenario that we would want to see, that everyone, all the members, are able to enjoy that savings as opposed to doing something on their own. And that sets you up for the business case. The other thing that's going on in all this, though, is there is a shift in control that's going on. I hesitate to use the word control, but at the same time, as we move assets from one place to another, we recognize that that is not something that should be taken lightly, and that there is an aspect of control and duty of care and fiduciary responsibilities that goes with it. And whatever it is we're doing also has to be worth all of that in the process. So, yes.
Could you go back to that last point?
Sure.
There was a discussion that took place with the what we now call the Executive Steering Committee at this meeting last Thursday. And I heard several of the mayors say, and I just want to see if we have this consensus in the room, that if you were looking at saving money 5 to 10 years, that view was different than if you look at it for 40 years. And what I heard everyone on the Executive Steering Committee say is 40 years is the number that we agreed to look at as we tackle that first question. And I think that's important because we could get all done with this and then someone could say, well, in 5 years I'm spending more. But 40 was the number that I heard us all agreeing to.
Yep. And we discussed 40, and then if it worked for 40, it should work beyond 40.
Correct.
But need to look beyond, obviously, 5 or 10. We need to look at the long term. So.
Good point. So as we're looking at these questions, we're not looking for instant savings necessarily, but long run savings out of this. And I think that's a great point to be made. That's true. In fact, in the short run, we may see that there could be slightly higher costs as we make this transition and we move into that space. Sometimes that happens. I've seen it happen. And then in the longer run, those things kind of work themselves out, and you get to a more sustainable operational pace, and you get a more predictable cost.
Jason, is there something in between? So you say, well, 40 years will be a lot happier.
Well, yeah.
So something in between, and you say, you know, you can take the bullet for 5 years or whatever,
yeah.
But you must be able to have some calculation that shows.
It'd be nice if it could be sooner than 40 years.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is,
I might not be managing here in 40 years.
I think the good news is we're gonna look at it over that entire time frame. So that, and we'll get to that here in a minute. We'll talk about the scope and what we're looking for here.
So it's
but,
range more than
yeah,
eight.
Yeah. So we're not going to look out at the 40th year and forget about all the other years. We're going to look at every year. And that's great because it goes to the questions that we need to ask and answer here. So what are the water production costs for East Community, assuming there is no regional authority and operations continue as they are today? Let's take that first question all by itself. All four of these are going to come together at the end, but take the first one all by itself and think about what that really means. It means everything that we did during phase one, kind of throw that out the door for a minute, and we just kind of all go along our merry way, the way that we have been in the past. What does that mean? There's a cost to that future. And our job here in phase one is to try to at least do a reasonably good job of estimating what that future cost function looks like for each of you. And there is a cost for each community. in here. Whether you're a total service customer, or whether you're a wholesale customer, if you have purchase capacity, there is an implication to going forward as it is today and a future cost involved with it. We can always say that the future is a cloudy place and someplace that we can't be completely sure about. That's always true. But we also know a lot. And we know a lot about what things cost today, and we know that with a few principles applied, that it's not likely to cost a whole lot less tomorrow than what it costs today. If we apply some smart thinking to it, we can come up with a reasonable range of estimates for what those costs are in the future. That's really step one. So we have to know, what does that look like before we can start answering these other questions? The second question is sort of a step in between number one and three. Because what we need to know in step three are, what are the future costs looking like if we assume that we have an authority in place? But before we can answer that question, we really need to know, how is the authority likely to incur these costs? And then how is it likely to share those costs among the members? And there's an extremely important discussion in here about that cost-sharing framework. So, for example, it was just mentioned, if we're coming to the table and we're bringing all of these assets in, I think it was Mayor Andewick before he left, you know, that means something for us. What does it mean for everybody else? How do we equalize that over some period of time? Those kinds of questions can be answered in that cost-sharing framework, and that's what we need to do in phase two. So we're going to be proposing a methodology for doing that, a couple of them that you can evaluate. But we do need to come up with that so that we can create a forward cost projection like we have in number three for what are all those costs once the authority is in charge of all those costs. So if they're taking that over, then what does that look like? And is it different than what we see in number one? And then, of course, what we have is a comparison to make. So for the four, number four there is, how do those compare? So if I have my own way of going about doing this, as I said, the status quo case, and then I have the possibility of forming this authority, I ought to see a benefit from those two things, and it ought to be clear and obvious as to what that benefit really is. It may look something like this. This is taken from an old study that I had done some time ago. But what we have here is that comparison. So blue is the status quo, red is the regional case. In this case, the difference between the two, if you were to take all of those cost savings that are shown there and kind of add them all up, you would come up with your benefit in that case. Does it always look like that? Unfortunately, it does not. And we would like to think so, because when you go into a regional situation and you increase the scale of what you're doing, your expectation going in is that you will see economies of scale. But there are things that kind of defy economies of scale at times, and that's going to be our task here, is to try to weed through that and figure that out. I can say this is what we kind of expect to see. I can also say at the same time is that if we don't see that, then you'll see that. We're not going to hide that from you. We're not going to sugarcoat it. If we come back and we see that there's a way out there where somebody has a lower cost of producing, we want to show that to you. And then we can talk about what to do about that, if anything. So this is kind of what that looks like. And really, when we present the results to you, I want it to look this simple. So we will have done all of the work in the background to get to what these outputs look like. And it is a lot of work, because what we need to know in order to make those simple little graphs is, for each one of those years, what is the estimated total cost of providing service out there in all of those years? And what are the units of production out there in all of those years? Plenty of things to consider for every community as we try to draw that conclusion. So what drives some of those differences? The big one is scale, or lack thereof. So any fixed cost divided by more units of service is going to result in an average of a lower average cost per unit. Water utilities, by their nature, include an incredible amount of fixed cost. incredible amount, where the amount of cost that you're incurring tends to not really vary a whole lot by the amount of water that you're producing. But if you can produce a lot of water with that fixed cost, you can then price it at a lower price, a lower average unit cost. Variable costs, on the other hand, we can factor that into that price pretty readily. But we tend to not have a great amount of variable costs in most water production, most water systems. Other things that drive costs, real cost efficiencies. And when I say real, I mean real in that they're not being driven by things like inflation or assumption or anything like that. They're literally efficiencies that are being gained in one of these areas. Project efficiencies is one area. You know, an example is projects at a community level, a small level, could be suboptimal in size, and that leads to a higher average total cost per unit. That's one area. Financing efficiencies, to the extent that an entity can borrow money or obtain capital at a lower cost than another, that can lead to some cost savings. So if we were to rationalize that the authority, let's say after a suitable startup period, say 5 to 8 years, might be able to have a larger financing capacity than, say, I don't know, just pick a community, Altoona, could they borrow money at a lower rate? Quite possibly. And would that lead to some efficiencies? Yes. And we should recognize that. Avoided costs would be another one. To the extent that we've got entities in the status quo out there trying to make investments to increase their capacity, and under the authority case, those same investments might be duplicative, then we have something where we could have an avoided cost or project efficiency, depending on the way you wanted to look at it. Those are a few examples of things that we need to look at there. I drug this out of any old textbook. Apparently it was a British one because they've got pounds up there instead of dollars. But this is really meant to give you a sense of what's at the center here of our second phase of work, is trying to figure out what kinds of economies of scale are we going to see between that status quo and between the authority case. Long run average cost, that's the big curve that's in the middle of there. And long run kind of goes to the comment that was made earlier. How long is the long run? It's going to be at least 40 years as we look at this analysis. And this curve is classic, right out of economics 101. It's a typical high fixed cost operation. And what you end up seeing here is a couple of really important points. If you look along the horizontal axis there, and you were to take your cost, you take your total cost at that point and divide it by your total units produced. You're at Q1, that's your total units produced. And you just go straight up onto that curve and then to the left and you see P1. Well, that's the price that you would need to charge, and it's very applicable to a water utility, in order for you to collect enough money to pay for the cost to produce. If you have our total cost and we price all of our units of output at P1, we recover exactly the cost to produce. When we do rates for water utilities, that's exactly what we're trying to find, is what is that average cost for us to serve? And depending on where you're at on this curve is going to determine how high that price is or how low. With a given capacity, a given investment and plan, we have a long-range average cost curve that looks a lot like this. The more we can produce towards the maximum capacity, the lower we can make that price. So when you move out towards Q2 and you have the capacity to produce at Q2, you can lower that price to P2. Right? If you have the ability to produce at Q2 and you're not, and you're producing less, you can be said to be suboptimal. Anyone remember this? We showed this curve to you a few workshops ago, and I just showed you the textbook example. This one is actually an example that's more relevant to you. This, I pulled the cost inputs out of the 2016 cost of service study that Des Moines Water Works had done, a very good study. And all I did was plot the total costs at different levels of production, and came up with my own average cost curve. And then once I knew what that was, I could go back and look at where each one of the entities really, where their demand stopped and where the rest of the demand picked up. So all this was meant to show you was to demonstrate this exact point, except for you. And that if you produced, right now you're producing with all the customers in the system all the way down there at $2.75 average cost of producing, all the way down there, which is wonderful. And if you weren't doing that and you were more suboptimal because you didn't have the, either the customers to sell it to and you weren't producing for whatever reason, then you start moving up and to the left on the curve.
So is that mild reliant growth?
Nope, not this one. No. When we start looking at next increments of growth, what happens is that curve shifts as we add fixed cost on top. This is just for today's function, right? So as we look at every year in the future, we're going to get a curve that looks like this for every single year, really. And as investment gets stacked on, we'll see that fixed cost becomes higher as we go out. So total cost is going to go up. That makes sense. So as we incur more investment and we have to do more, we have to buy more, we have to provide more, it costs more. The question is, can we provide it at scale? Can we provide it at a better scale regionally than we can individually? If we're able to answer those questions, and I have every confidence that we will be able to show you a definitive business case, either for or against, depending on what community you're in, for regionalization. In order for us to answer those questions, though, we're going to need a good amount of input from you, and I want to go over that now so that you can get an idea as to what we're asking for and what that looks like and the timeline that we need to get it in. So I've just explained to you what it is we're trying to do, and so the things that we're asking for are pretty straightforward. They're things that help us forecast demand, quantity. How much do we need to provide? How much is going to tell us how much we need to produce? It's going to tell us what Q is in our curve there. Good news, we have a long-range plan, very good one, that provides us with a very good forecast of what demands are expected to look like in the region. More on that in a minute. We also need to know the things that are going to help us forecast total cost. So if you've got a cost, we need to know what it is. That includes operating costs, certainly. Investments, yes, those are the capital improvement projects. Financing of those investments, and so forth. Any and all of those things together help us get an idea as to what that total cost is, both now and in the future. We're going to need to project that out a pretty long time. So getting it right to begin with helps us get the starting point right. And then again, anything that's going to help us define what those are today and in the future. So with respect to growth, with respect to future needs, we need to know what those are. Again, I really feel like the long-range plan provides us a pretty good insight into a lot of those inputs. And so when we got to doing our information request, and this is a, I love my little graphic there, had no idea that that photograph was going out. I have no idea where that came from. I just changed it when I saw this and put it on the slide, so hopefully next time you get an email from me, it's better than that.
It looks like 10 years old.
Yeah, exactly. So we sent out 14 requests to different communities. Not every community needed to get an information request. In particular, total service customers did not need to get an information request because we feel that Des Moines Water Works can answer all of the questions for the total service customers that are needed. However, I hasten to say that we do have contact information for all total service customers, and if something comes up that we need, we will be in touch and we'll be making those requests. But the requests are very financial and they're very much focused on water production. So one of the things that you'll see in these requests is that we're really trying to separate the work we're doing into water production and not into distribution. We don't have all of the time and scope that we would like to be able to separate out all those distribution-related questions. However, we are going to ask a lot of questions about water production. So you'll see in your requests, if you received one, that we've kind of categorized the requests into three different types. Each of yours has been customized for you. A lot of it depends on what type that we've assigned to you preliminarily. Producers are those who have water production capacity. Okay, so we know who those are today, and they received a certain kind of information request.
Jason?
Yeah.
Did you, of those 14 and the producers, did you include places like potential ones when we talked about Grimes and Oak City or whatever also?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, and that brings me to the
Grimes.
Grimes got a data request, yes. So potential producers is another category. We have heard and we know that some have studied the idea of expanding production and producing. We are asking for those studies. All right, so regardless of which category you're in, I think we've asked that question on all of the, is that right, Andy? We asked that on all of them, didn't we?
I think the general statement is we included, generally the long range plan is our base starting point for data. But if any of you have supplemental studies, additional things that you think we need to know about and include in this, we want to see it. we want to see it now, soon, so we can start working on it in what we commence with.
So in other words, you can self-select in the potential producers category by giving us your studies on what it is you've anticipated to do. Conceptual plans, engineering studies would be best. And then there's the wholesale group, which are those who are probably situated to continue to buy water on the status quo from Des Moines, and would probably continue to do so with the authority. We need these materials back. We've set a deadline for May 4th. However, what I've said too is that we're much more interested in accuracy than we are in speed here. Recognize that it's 2 weeks. Those things were sent out last week. They were sent out Thursday evening, all at the same time. And it does give 2 weeks. However, some of the things we're requesting, I know, could take longer. Good news is we're here to work with you on that. Each one of your data requests has a very specific person identified on the request. That is your coordinator that is specifically assigned to you. That person will be reaching out to you this Friday to see how you're doing on the information requests, see if you need any help or explanation. But you should feel free to reach out to our team to give any help or clarification that's needed. And if that person can't help you, obviously there's more of us here, and you can always call me directly if you need to. Things that we've requested there, just a sampling, historical production expense, financial information related to that. Existing debt service, what money has been borrowed on the production assets, including purchase capacity. Future capital improvements for water production. What do you have in your capital improvements plan? Do you have an engineering study that's advising you to do something along these lines? We'd like to know what those are. Any plans for constructing new or expanding existing water production? And importantly, we're asking you to verify or validate demand and growth projections that we see in the long-range plan, because the long-range plan is a quite good document that has a lot of information in it that I feel was very well executed by some really excellent engineering firms. I could say this, kind of echoing what Andy said, is we would like to very much rely on what we see in the long-range plan in terms of demand and its forecast. But what we're asking you for is for you to look at your numbers from that long-range plan, and we've given them to you in the data request, and let us know if you're okay with it or if you need us to change it. And if you need us to change it, we're asking you to provide us with that information. So I recognize sometimes those studies are done, and they do try to be very inclusive in it, but sometimes they don't always get it right. This is the chance. If you're not happy with what you see in that long-range plan, please spend the time on this and tell us what that outlook looks like for you. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Jason, if I could just ask Bill to share, because I want the mayors to know that this, we're asking for a significant amount of time of your staff. And Bill, you came back with the approximate number of hours in order to complete it. Would you share primarily for the mayors so they know what we're talking about?
And I'm sure, Sue, that our situation isn't comparable to very many other communities because we do each year the cost of service. So that provides a pretty ready source of much of the requested data here. For us, we estimated 80 to 100 hours. And that's from our finance folks as well as from our engineering staff. Manageable, realistically, for us and for this organization. But I think it might be a little bit more difficult for a number of the other communities.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea, this is, we pulled this together from our long range plan. It just kind of compiled a lot of data into one easy to look place. Talks about the demand out there for up to 2040. So the long-range plan does have a pretty long-range view to it, as you might imagine. And what we've shown here is what that looks like versus the Des Moines capacity, at least, at 105 MGD. That's the red line, that guy right there. So you know, one of the things it shows right off the bat is, if you were just to believe this straight out of the box, that we got to have some more capacity in place pretty quickly. By roughly 2020, in order for us to not be over capacity. That's one of the findings, I think, that's in the plan. If you were to extrapolate that a little bit further and look at all of the capacity, including what we're thinking about with the other producers, we have some more capacity, but there's also more demand back there that's not really being counted in the long-range plan because it's not a demand on Des Moines system. It's a demand on the individual system. So any way you look at it, it looks like there's more capacity that's needed here, which is obviously one of the reasons why the regional entity is being discussed. So these are numbers that we're asking you to take a close look at and validate. There's a lot in those data requests, and we weren't intending to cause you to have to go and spend a tremendous amount of time on it. I'll tell you what I did to put these data requests together, and maybe it will help if you're thinking a little bit. Is I instructed my team that we will not ask for anything in these data requests that we do not absolutely need for our analysis. And so those requests, the draft requests, were pared back a bit because of that. And if there's something on there that you question whether or not we really need it or we'll use it, please do call me because it's not my intent to spin your wheels or waste your time. The things that are on there are things that I've personally looked at, each one of these things, and I think we need what we're asking for there in order for us to answer the important questions. So if there's any cause to discuss it, please just give me a call. Okay. And that takes us to some of the key dates coming up. We do have some meeting dates, and I'm going to put May 4th on there, not a meeting, but that's when we're expecting to get a lot of the data requests back, unless we arrange for a different time with you. I would like for you to shoot for that date, please. June 25th. We're not able to get together in May, but June 25th, we will be able to get together. I understand there's some scheduling conflicts. No problem on our part rescheduling, just so you know. We're not going to be your bottleneck. Okay, so when you got to move around council meetings and you've got all those things to deal with, just let us know where it comes out. We'll fix it.
I think we, as at Des Moines, West Des Moines, Irvindale, had met earlier. We thought June 27th. Better than June 25th.
Sounds good.
Being the council meeting on Monday night, so Wednesday night, June 27th instead of 25th.
I know that'll make Andy happy. He had to get up at 1 o'clock this morning to fly in. So. Okay. So 25th, 27th, whenever we redo this, when we look at that first meeting, what I'm expecting to have for you at that is the status quo forecasts. I'm expecting those to be done. So I would like to be able to look at those on June 25th or that week when we get together and see what that looks like. I also want to have for you on June 25th a preliminary, at least concept of what that regional cost-sharing framework would look like, and I hope to have about two of them that you could look. There are different ways to approach these things, and I'm going to have a couple of ideas for you on that, and we can talk about the pros and cons of those and which one you think that we should move forward with. I'd like that to be your decision, but I'd like to be able to offer you some options there on how that works. And then when we come back a month later, my belief is that we will have the regional cost estimates prepared. So that would be the second of the two scenarios, in a preliminary fashion at least. And the cost sharing framework should be obviously built into those at that point. So what we'll see on July 30th is really, if you could distill it, it would be our first run at the at the cost forecasts and the under the regional authority scenario. We'll get a lot of feedback, no doubt, at July 30th as well. And then by August 27th, the end of August, we would like to come back with the comparison. So what does the business case look like? That simple chart that I showed you right at the beginning, how does that look for you and your community? We'll show them all up here and talk about kind of what we need to do next at that point. So that's the slate right there in terms of getting together. I'd say the in terms of our scope of effort and scope of work, the first task that we have on our task list is to get the information requests out and get the information from you. And the good news is that's launched. The information requests are out. You've all received them. And we'll be following up with you to get them. And then we'll be doing our work.
Just some other dates for all of you in the room. I know you're looking at your calendar saying, wait, but we have Wednesday also reserved. At the time that we changed the scope with our engagement with Jason, we did not want to take those dates off your calendar in case you wanted to use those times as part of your technical and finance committee. So we will be rolling out the new dates for the two separate committees once the technical committee has a chance to meet. But your Wednesday meeting will not be of this entire group. We are not meeting. So that frees up some time on your calendar should you decide to use that time. Is that
okay? Well, unlike most of the workshops, I did a lot of the talking here, and we didn't have a lot of discussion, but I'm done. And if you have any questions about what we're about to engage in and how we're going to go about doing that, I sure would like to answer those questions here tonight.
I have one, Jason.
Sure.
The technical committee, is that going to have someone from every city on it or not? Is that still...
You guys want to answer that?
I think that was the goal of coming up.
So we need to appoint someone to that.
Yes.
Congratulations, you've got a job. And if you're looking for finances, that'll end up in your clerk at the deal or something. This technical committee is supposed to be
we ask you to coordinate that with our dates once we confirm with Jason and Chairs. And then to our three tri chairs, do you want to try to have a meeting on Wednesday of the first meeting for your technical and finance meeting?
So I think to some degree they're going to have to kind of sort out. There's an existing technical committee now. The scope for this technical committee may be narrower. I guess that's kind of for them to decide. But the other point is that there's going to be some confusion and some sorting through that will have to go through and some scheduling issues because there's already an existing technical committee.
For for certain.
Yes. Yeah, I might propose that the three of us would talk through our new assignment.
To the races.
Good job.
We're going out of the door with a lot. I recognize right now is going to be a full blast for some of your communities trying to come up with the information that we need. Please do reach out to our coordinators. I made sure that you each had one specifically assigned to you, and if you have any questions at all, I want you to call them or email them immediately, and if they can't answer your question, I'll be getting back in touch to you myself.
One thing that would be nice, too, is if this presentation can be sent out. It's a good reference document to have, and
sure.
Especially as we're sharing things with our city council. It's got some easy slides in there that explains a lot. That's probably on the website also, or not.
Yes,
we've been putting things on the website.
Oh, have you? On our website, but I'll do a follow-up email and send it out.
Or you just let us know when it's posted, and we can just pull it off the website. That'd be great.
Do we, this is a related question, this place is Sirdwick meetings, maybe do we intend to continue to meet as Sirdwick?
The executive committee did talk about that recently because of these meetings, this meeting and specifically today, they canceled tomorrow's meeting. The executive committee at this time plans to go ahead and meet in July. That would be a good update for FCS to give to that group. There are some different players, some different attendees. So right now, the July Sirdwick meeting will likely occur. And then we'll just, play it quarter by quarter. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Jason, is it possible that request for information, I don't send them out there? Can you email that to me?
Absolutely. Yeah. But maybe a word on how we selected who we were going to send them to. I didn't cover that.
I assume it went to our city clerk.
Generally, where we had water boards in place, the request went to the general manager and the board chair who's representing them in this group here. Where we had a city in place, generally it went to a mayor and city manager. And in some other cases, and maybe where Altoona is one of them, it went to the city administrator or someone of like cause.
But that's fine. I'll check with it.
I'm happy to email it to you too, Vern. Didn't leave you out on purpose. But we're trying to stay consistent with who received them.
I just want to be able to know so I can follow up.
Absolutely.
And you had information on the water districts.
Sorry.
Xenia is an example. Gary, did you get it?
Oops. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got some folks who don't fall into the category.
Right. Yeah, we had a different.
Yeah.
Different one. Amy helped us get all the names. Thank you, Amy.
We have a work session tonight, and I want to go over it. They won't like to stay longer, but I need to make sure because it is a timeline that you'd like to have happen. So, on the information.
Yeah. We'll get you that tonight, Vern. All right, then.
Thanks, everybody. Hey, Mark.
Efficient.